Thank you, Rabbi. I'm truly honored and touched by your kind words. It's truly an honor to be at your shul and to be able to be zocheh to be standing at the podium in which you stand. Your reputation far exceeds these buildings, and it's truly a schus to be able to be here, and of course to fill into the whole ACT organization, to have an organization. I was schmoozing with the Rav earlier about the good old, and I wasn't in the good old days, but in the good old days of the Musar Vadim and what it must have been like to actually work your life on being a better person. Which is, I think, what God wants from us, I would think. It's on the top of His priority list. And to have an organization that's so dedicated to that, it's a true schus to be able to speak for you. And Hashem should bless you, both the Rav and the Shul and this organization, for many, many, many years of Hatzlacha and Bracha. And may, when Mashiach comes, may they look at you and say, wow, look, you guys have really helped us get closer and closer to the goal. Put you right up front, box seats for Mashiach. At least that's how I see the world, through a baseball game, whatever, but it's a show. Amen. So the topic for tonight is gratitude. But I want to take a little bit of a different approach. And I want to almost go the other way. And almost like when you have a medicine bottle, the top, you really want to get to the bottom. And I want to almost flip it. Because gratitude brings you somewhere. And I want to speak first about where it brings you and the value of it, and then we'll get to, at the end, just how it all connects. So indulge me if you will. Because if you have to think about life, and you ask yourself, if I would put on my priority list, what's the number one thing I want in life? If I had a choice. You remember the good old days where you saw those, like, those cartoons where you went down, or you end up in an alleyway and you saw those little lamps, and you rub the lamp and the genie comes out and he goes, you have one wish. And you go, what? I thought it was three wishes. He goes, it's a recession. You have one wish. So what do you ask for? So if you're under 10, what do you ask for? A million more wishes. But if you're over 10, you got to play the game. What do you ask for? What do you want for our kids? What do you want for your children? What's driving almost everything that we do? The clothes we wear, the jobs we have, the things we get excited about. What is the internal driver that makes society tick, that makes this country tick? It's life, it's liberty, but what is it really? It's happiness. We want to be happy. We want our kids to be happy. We want a life where we feel this feeling that is happy. And when we want something, if we don't have this, no matter whatever else we have, it doesn't feel the same. And if we have it, no matter what we're going through, it seems to be okay. And the question for the few minutes we have tonight is, how? How do we achieve true happiness? How do we achieve something that is so, it's almost untouchable, but it's so important to us? You know, today is the yard site of Rav Chaim Vital, who's the Talmud Mufak of the Arizal, wrote tons of Sfarim, one including Sha'ari Kedusha. Rav Chaim Vital writes that one of the most important characteristics of a Jew is simcha, happiness. How? So, the rabbis, there's a couple of rules when it comes to rabbis in Torah. I'm going to name a couple. One is we never really get to the whole emotion thing. They really can't tell us how to feel. It's not like, you know, in the Siddur. It's like, you know, you're doing great, awesome, sniffle, good, get some crying, shed a tear, cry, exit left, book of life. It doesn't work that way. Because you can't really tell us how to feel. We feel the way we feel. Second, they don't really, never really count. There's not really like point scores. Judy is not like Super Mario Brothers. You don't like get like certain points for certain things and double point values later. You can't really have a point score for Judaism. Some people think that Judaism is like going to the fair. You ever take your kids to like an amusement park today? I don't know, this is how I do with my kids. Take an amusement park, the first time you walk in, as they walk in the beginning, it's like they see all the rides, they're going crazy, right? And as they're walking in, they see that little prize counter, you know what I'm talking about? And then get tickets. And the rest of the day becomes, how many tickets can I get, right? So they get enter into these complicated like joint ventures with like brothers and sisters. And they play the games they hate, like the rolling game. And at the end of like the entire day, they have like 17 million tickets. You know what I'm talking about? You remember that? Yeah. And you go to the counter, it's like, you have 17 million tickets. You can get either a ball or a little pad. And the kid's like, ball, pad, ball. I hate you, ball. I hate you, pad. They're screaming. They both are worth a quarter. And then finally they get the ball. And then they like finally, like, one kid is happy. And on the way to the car, like it drops into the sewer. You know what I'm talking about? We think we have to like finish broke up for 120, be like, oh Charlie, okay, good. Okay, Well, you didn't get a suite. That's why you're a lawyer. We can't give you a suite ever. You didn't get down in the basement. We get here. This suite, you get this room, you get room service. We think like at the end of the 20, like that's how mitzvahs work, right? We get double point value for it. And then my kids come back with like stuff. But it's, and it's nice. And there are schar. And schar works. But like we think it's like, you know, and I wear tzitzis on Shabbos while it's like, and I say hi to my mom. I get triple point value because it's Yom Kippur and I'm fasting. I'm going to do great. As if like there's like a point system in Shemayim. There's like a scorecard going on. All of us are sort of getting points or getting demerits, getting points. It's that simple. It's not really how it works. It's much more complicated than that. And the rabbis never say like this is a big mitzvah. They're all big mitzvahs. We don't really know. With one glaring exception, arguably one of the most famous, I think, lines in throughout the years is Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman says something amazing. And since it's become a song, we forget it. But it's outstanding if you think about it. Rabbi Nachman says, mitzvah gedola. I'm stepping out on a limb on this one. This is a big one. We get double point value for this. Lihios, to be. Besimcha, happy. Emotions, I'm regulating, he says. You know when? Tamid. We have a big, it is a big mitzvah. This is a big one. To not only be happy, but to be always happy. How is that possible? It's not even like an obligation, it's a mitzvah. Which means that not only do we have the option, each and every one of us has the ability and the obligation to be constantly, always happy. How? So picture, if you will, a bunch of soldiers marching in Israel. Soldiers are marching, and since it's Israel, they're walking for a little bit, they're in a desert, then a minute later they're in a forest, then there's like a shawarma stand, then they just keep on moving, they're in Ben Yehuda Street, and they're back in the desert within 5 minutes. And they're marching, and they're marching, they hit the desert, they're starving, and they're thirsty, and they're going out of their minds, and they're marching, and they're marching, and all of a sudden they hit this nice little, like, you know, water area, and the soldier, the commander turns around and sees that his soldiers are upset, and they're so thirsty, he goes, you know what, he has Rahman, he goes, you know what, 5 minutes. And they're so excited, they jump into the water, and they're drinking, and they're great, and they come out, 5 minutes later, on the dot. And he lines up, and goes, forward march. Shawarma stand, Ben Yehuda, they're back in the desert. What happens, 5 to 5 minutes, they're all thirsty again. Well, one soldier was smart. He brought a cup. Lasted them 5 minutes. Another soldier was smart, he brought a canteen. That lasted him for an hour. A third soldier was the smartest. He's been to America once. He's been to football games. You remember those football games where they have the backpacks with the beer in it, that it goes right into your mouth? God forbid you pick up your hands while you watch football. The beer should flow into your ivy like that. He has a backpack. It lasted him for like 2 hours. The army was smarter. They knew that they had to walk a long way. They brought a little water tank that followed the troops. What is the difference in the water? The difference in the water is not, the difference in having water is not how much water was available. There was plenty of water available. The difference is in the vessel. The cup holds the water for a few minutes. The canteen, a little longer. The water carrier, that holds water for a long time. The essence of simcha, of happiness, is not the stuff out there that makes us happy. There is plenty of stuff out there to make us happy all the time. The difference in us being happy is not the water that's outside. The difference of us being happy is how strong our vessel is. When we're a little cup, we only last a little bit and we're always fighting for it. But if we're a big water carrier, there are times where we fill to the top. And there are times when we go really low, but we never, ever get to a place of not being happy. If there's one thing that the Jewish people are not, are Pollyannish. We don't whitewash things. We have a month that is designated to basically destruction and fasting. We have a day where we sit on the floor and we open up things to say, and the keynotes have things like, you can't even watch, it's like rated R with too much violence, the keynotes. You can't have your kids say it. Mothers are eating babies. Things are terrible. We don't whitewash things. And in that month of Av, that is designated for pain, to remember how bad it was, the Mishnah says, "Mishenichnas Av, mematim b'simcha." Whoa! You don't go underneath simcha. I mean, that's not Jewish. You never get no. I mean, let's not be crazy for a second. We're going to talk about death and destruction, but we never get underneath not being happy, because the essence of a Jew is figuring out how to build themselves into a vessel that sometimes is mamatim and sometimes is marbim, but you never, ever spend a moment of your life not in the category of simcha. And so the question for the few minutes we have is, how? Because if we can figure out how to build a vessel, we win. And the whole game changes. So how do we do it? So let's begin the way I learned how to understand things. In law school, they taught us very easily, if you can't understand what something is, you need to understand what it is not. So let's begin by understanding what happiness is not. So, I'm a very emotional guy. Like, I'm the guy that, like, you know the guys that never cry? That's still not me. That's like my dad. I'm the guy who cries on command. I see my kids in the morning, I'm like, good morning to you too. That's who I am. I see a bird, I'm like crying, you can fly. I'm always in a state of basically tears. So, I was one time on a, and the emotional stuff really gets me. I don't know. I like watching things that make, I don't know why. Like, I'll see something and like, I'll cry, my wife will be like, can you relax? I'm like, what if like this, when she dies, she's like, just relax. This is who I am. So one time I was on a JetBlue flight, and I was flying to LA. And I came to the flight, and I had like 6 hours of nothing to do. And at the window was a guy, I was in the middle, and at the aisle was a woman. So the guy turns around, right, he puts on the TV. What's the first thing the guy watches when he gets on a JetBlue flight to LA? ESPN. He's watching ESPN, so I'm like, yeah, we're grunting at each other. I'm like, oh, ESPN. I put on ESPN, he puts it in, it's great. The lady next to me and to my right, she puts on some show. I don't know what she's watching, but she is totally engrossed in it. And she's like half crying, like she's having an amazing time in the corner. I don't know what she's doing. So he's watching. I can't change the channel because I can't. I'm a guy. I got to watch ESPN. There's a guy next to me. I mean, I have a little bit of pride. So he's watching ESPN. I'm watching ESPN. CNBC, ESPN, CNBC, ESPN. Finally, after a while, he falls asleep. And I'm like, okay, now I can go see what she's watching. So she's, I don't know what is going on there, but she is engrossed in something. I'm like, I gotta get a piece of this. So I look over the channel, and I click onto what she's watching. And I see something that I'll never forget. She's watching some interview show, I don't know who it is. It's like an interview, there's a woman interviewing another woman. There's a lot of women on this show. There was a woman interviewing me, and then there was like just, there was Estrogen City over there, it was unbelievable. And I'm watching the show, and the show was, the lady interviewer was interviewing this woman. And the woman had come on because she's on like this circuit talking about substance abuse. And she was going around talking about how terrible it is and in prevention. And she was telling her story how she had abused antidepressants and then ultimately drugs and alcohol, and now she's in recovery. And as she's telling her story, the show cuts to like her video, like her bat mitzvah video, and like not really bat mitzvah, but her video, and it basically shows her life. And her life opens up. She was a young girl in Texas, and she won this like Miss Junior Texas pageant. And then she got a little older, and she went to this big public school, and she auditioned for the singer songwriter talent competition, and she won. And she got able to play in some club in the area, and one day an agent walks in, and it was from a different city, and sees her and finds her, and she gets an album, she gets to get a song, and then she gets a song, and then she opens for a band, and then she gets an album, and the movie goes quickly, and ultimately she goes from being a no-name girl in some town in Texas to being a famous country singer. And her album goes platinum. And then she moves into this big mansion. She got the cars, the whole deal. And all of a sudden that like ambulance comes on the screen. No, like something bad's going to happen. Ambulance comes on the screen. And like she overdoses on antidepressants. And her life sort of spirals out of control. And she ends up on the show as she's trying to recover. So the interviewer turns to her and says, tell us what happened. So she says, the truth is, when my album went platinum, that's really when I started abusing antidepressants. And the interviewer turns, I'll never forget this, and leans back and says, I'm sorry. I need to ask you the question that every one of my viewers are thinking. How did you get depressed? I mean, look at you. You are the American dream. You come from nowhere. You had some dream to be a singer, and somehow you managed to make it. And then when your album goes platinum, you start taking antidepressants until you abuse them? How is that possible? I'll never forget, she leans back as if the question wasn't coming. I'm thinking like, who's your PR agent? Like, this is the softball. She leans back and she says the following. says, you know, when I was a little girl, all I ever wanted was to win the Miss Junior Texas pageant. It would make me so happy. And I did. And then all I really wanted was, I mean, just to be known as like a little, I wanted to show my talent. And in the school, they had this competition. And all I really wanted was to be able to win the competition, and I did. And I mean, school is so lame. I mean, all I really wanted was to play at a real place with adults, and I got a chance, and I was so happy. And then all I knew what really make me happy is if, I mean, playing in this club in the middle of nowhere, there's nothing for your career. If someone could just sort of see me and give me a chance, I would be so happy. And one day someone walked in and saw me. And I said, listen, to be able to cover for other bands is one thing, but to have your own song, to put your artistic talent into something, I mean, that would make me so happy, and I got my own song. And then, I mean, come on, just having a song is one thing, but to be able to play in a concert in front of thousands of screaming fans, I mean, I figured that would make me so happy. And then I opened for a band, and then I figured, you know, listen, one song is one thing, but to have an album that is just all yours, I thought that would make me so happy, and I got an album. I mean, just having my friends and family buy it, but for the people to really love my album, I mean, I figured if I could just go something, I'd be so happy. And one day I woke up, and my album went platinum. And I had everything in the world I ever wanted. And I still wasn't happy. So I became depressed. And I spiraled down. What is happiness not? We think that happiness is an outcome. Then I'm going to be happy. The reason why so many of us hold back happiness is because we think that there's an outcome that's going to give it to us. We're going to come down the rainbow into the bowl of golden coins, and then finally I'm going to get that thing. The reason why I'm not walking around happy, Charlie, is, I mean, this is a beautiful, I like this, it's a great idea, they brought you here, it's really great. It's wonderful, you don't know my life, you don't know my life, you don't know my life. If this could just, then I'd be happy. This is our whole life, right? You little kids, maybe that, mommy, please, if I could just get the Wii, I'd be so happy to get them the Wii. If I just get the bike, I'd be so happy to get them the bike. If I could just get out of elementary school to middle school, I would be so happy to get to middle school. I mean, middle school's so bad. I mean, come on. If I can get to high school with the real cool kids, I get to high school. Then they get to high school, I'm like, high school, yeah. When I get out to college, then I'll be happy to get to college. When I get out to the real world, then I'll be happy. It's really cool. This is the real world. When I get back into college, then I'll be happy. Then you go, well, listen, I mean, I'm single. When I can find my one, I'll be happy. Like, you know, the truth is, when we have kids, then I'll be happy. The kids are so little, you gotta change diapers up all night. He goes, when the kids, like, they can take care of themselves, like, they become teenagers, then we'll be happy. Then they become teenagers, and nobody is ever happy. You know, the truth is, when I get my kids married, then I'll be so happy. When the kids are married and they're settled, then I'll be so happy. And it's so hard, we're gonna make them all these things. When we can finally retire, then we're gonna be so happy. Then when you retire, you turn to your wife and go, you know, honey, remember when we were younger? That's when we were happy. Our whole life is a life of catching up to something that is right outside our grasp, that promises us that once I can get it into my grasp, I promise you, then I'm going to live. Then I'm going to smile. Then my kids are going to see me in the morning radiating. Then finally I'm going to stand in front of God and I'm going to say thank you with all my heart. When that thing just comes. Where does this come from? Unless you grew up in a cave, it comes from our wonderful society. I love our world. I gotta tell you, I love America. Last week I spoke for my grandparents, Yom HaShoah. My grandparents at my age, well, they were a little younger. My grandparents, they were younger, didn't have this. This country's given us a lot. We have to give a lot of our courage to talk to this country. But let me tell you what we got when you grow up here. When you grow up here, for all the good you get, there's one thing you get when you're very little. You want to be happy? Come here, I'm gonna show you. I'm telling you, this is it. You'll never see ever a holiday season when they go, kids, your toys work just fine. Stop wanting new toys and like the toys you got, you'll be just as happy. Happy holidays from all of us at Mattel, ever. You'll never have a season where they go, ladies, you look beautiful in your outfits. We're making it up. We don't even know what to do next. We don't know what styles are coming up. We're just sitting in Venice making stuff up. You ever have this? Big tie, small tie, everything's in and out. People are just making stuff up. You ever go to your grandparents' house for like Pesach or something, and you sit down, and one year you look at the album and you go, Bobby, like, what were you wearing back then? Right? Then the next year that style comes back in style. You go back to the same house, and you go, Bobby, you were in style back then. single moment, get. And I promise you. Who remembers 1995? Remember 1995? 1996. This was a big year. 1996 was a very important year in the modern world. Why? Because 1996 was the beginning of AOL.com. Do you remember AOL.com? Do you remember what Hawaii, what online used to look like? Anyone under 30, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So just, this was, we didn't have shoes and everything was uphill twice and it was always snowy. So just for 1 minute, us grandparents are going to go back in the good old days. Do you remember when we first got internet? Remember that? The dial-up. Remember those days? Where you had to find the three numbers that nobody knew of to get online. And when you got online, it was like you made Frankenstein. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, we're online! Remember those days? And your mom came in, you're like, what does that mean? You're like, Ma, please, this thing over here, we can do something called a chat room. She's like, what's a chat room? You're like, I can say hello to someone and that person's going to say hello back and they're not even in the room. And your mom's like, that's impossible. And you're like, watch, hello, click. Big hello. She's like, oh, are you a magician? I'm like, I just must be. Do you remember the good old days? No video, no audio, online. 1996 was the beginning of the greatest decade in technology. Remember 2005? You had things on our waists already. We already had BlackBerrys in 2005. 96, 2005, this country was drunk with stuff. Money was, forget about it. We had two bubbles in that period of time. Real estate, anyone was in real estate back in the good old days, everything you touched tripled. Money, technology, media, stuff. You never had a period of time with more stuff than that glory decade. In 1996, 5.8% of this country was on antidepressants. I'm not saying everyone doesn't need it. My mother's a psychiatrist with a subspecialty in antidepressants, in medication. Some people need it. Not everybody. Some people. In 2006, one decade after everything we want in the whole world hands us on a silver platter, that number, we should have been just too busy with new stuff to ever think about who. That number goes from 5.8% to 10.14%. It doubles in a decade. How? How? How is our GDP 400% more than our grandparents? We make four times more than our grandparents, and our happiness has gone up zero, and our depression has gone up between 200 to 600%. How is it possible that last year there were more suicides than homicides in America? How is that possible? That we live in a world where by 2020, the third greatest disability is going to be mental health. We have everything in the world. It's because stuff doesn't make us happy. Happiness is not outcome driven, and we think it is. Even as I'm saying it, you're like, yeah, but. If you had a okay, I'm sure God says it, but we know. And so now we take it and we put it even into school. We make even Torah now outcome driven. Now you're like, whether or not you're an Eved Hashem, you get a grade on being an Eved Hashem now. And the more we want, and the more we think it's right over, the more that simcha, that happiness, that anyone who observed Yom HaShoah should be going home that night and going, I can't put my feet on the ground. I mean, my kids are growing up in America, and my grandmother grew up, but yet, it's just, I just can't hold on to it. So what is happiness? And how do we get it? So I want to share with you a conversation I had with Rav Noach Weinberg. Rav Noach Weinberg was the dean of Eish HaTorah. I was lucky. God is good to me. When I first started speaking, I started speaking for Eish, and they said, do you want to spend 6 hours alone with Rav Noach? I'm like, you know, like Rav Noach, like his distant cousin Rav Noach? I'm like, the Rav Noach? They're like, yeah, the. I'm like, yes. You want all my blood? How does that work? Whatever the payment is, it's yours. And in that conversation, I mean, I have 20 speeches on those 6 hours, but this is one of them. What is happiness? So I'll tell you a story. I heard this in college, so it must be true. My first day in psychology class, the professor told me the story. There's a legend of a man who was about to commit suicide. Standing on top of a building, screaming out, I said, I'm going to jump. And everyone goes, please don't jump. I'm going to jump. I can't take it anymore. You know, I'm a Met fan, whatever it is. I can't survive anymore, whatever it is. I'm going to jump. And they go, please, it's okay. You can always be a Yankee fan. They go back and forth. He goes, no, it's too late. I'm going to jump. So as he's about to jump, some psychology intern climbs all the way up from the inside, and she comes out to the roof, and he goes, what are you doing here? She goes, I'm sorry, sir. I don't mean to bother you. I know you're in the middle of something important. Can I talk to you for a second? He goes, I'm about to commit suicide. She's like, you know, I'm doing my doctorate on suicide, so I'll get an A, so don't worry about it. Can I talk to you for a second? He goes, no. He goes, please, whatever's going to happen next, this is more important. He goes, how can I help you, young lady? He goes, do you mind if I do an exercise with you? He goes, do you see what's happening right now? She goes, no, I see. I'm a little stuck. You know, last thing you could do for your life is the good deed. He goes, how can I help you? She goes, do you mind closing your eyes? She goes, this is dumb. She goes, yeah, but what happened? You're going to be, you know, a spider in a minute. So do you mind? He goes, all right. So he closes his eyes. She goes, can you picture if you can for me that you grew up blind? You were born with that eyesight. And now you're up here about to jump. Your life is, you don't love your life. And as you're about to jump, somehow the altitude comes into your eyes. The wind blows it into your eyes and you can open up and see for the first time. What do? She says, I don't know. I go down the block. I look at the kids playing. I look at the sunset. I imagine as if you were born deaf. You can't hear. And now you're standing at the altitude, the wind, it gets into your ears. What do? She goes, I don't know. Symphony, concert, orchestra. She goes, imagine, and she takes him body part by body part by body part, down his entire body. And at the end she says to him, now that God has spared you a life without those things and given them to you from your birth, why don't you just enjoy them all the same? What is happiness? So happiness is not an outcome. It's a choice. It's a choice that we make every single day. The core of who we are is this choice. Because every one of us is born with a certain amount of attention. We can't see the world. God gave us a schema in which we can process the world from. If we took in every bit of stimulus inside us, we would break down with all the stimuli in the world. So at every single moment, we are seeing the world and only processing a fraction of it. Some things have to come. Survival come at us naturally. But there's part of our attention that we choose to focus on. And every single moment, we are choosing what to focus on. As Rav Noach said, happiness is this amazing ability that only some people have spent a lifetime building and others spend a lifetime trying to catch up to with stuff but never do. To take pleasure in what we have and not pain in what we don't. The way it's supposed to work in life is like anyone's ever gone scuba diving. You go out to the water and go, this is boring. And they give you a thing and you go, whoa, this is cool. Then they give you a scuba dive and you go, this is amazing. We're supposed to go through world our lives and get something and go, wow, this is awesome. Okay, and then as you get something, you go deeper on the next pleasure. You're still enjoying that first pleasure. And as you go deeper on pleasure one, you get pleasure two. You go, oh my gosh, you get this too. And you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And your bucket goes bigger and bigger and bigger and tighter and tighter and tighter. And we are supposed to take everything that we have and get so much pleasure out of it. That when stuff happens to us that's not great in comparison to what we have, we're blown away. Anyone who's a parent, you know what I'm talking about. You give your kids stuff, you take your kids away for Pesach, and they get and get and love and love. As a parent, what more can you ask for? You take your kids away for Pesach, and they're like, well, I was okay, but the meal, you know, the tea room didn't have enough chocolates. You're like, are you kidding me? The Kodesh Baruch Hu puts us into this world, and we're sitting around going, he's like, what? You're supposed to walk around every day a gedolah, Rabbi Nachman says, and take and take and enjoy and enjoy and see and get and deeper and deeper and deeper. But do we do that? I'll tell you a good story. My kids are like, when you give birth to kids, that like when you're a lawyer, you give birth to kids, it's over. I got like mini lawyers in my house. I've got a little mini law firm. Called my children. And they know how to get to me. All they got to do is say like, you know, we don't see you enough, and that's it, I'm done. So as soon as they want to, as soon as they need to get some new stuff, they just do the whole daddy, we never see you stuff. And I see my kids plenty, but you know what, they're my kids, so they have to play me. So I'll never forget, I was in Boston for Shabbos. I came home late one time, and late one month of Shabbos, and at the door, my three big ones. I'm like, hi guys. They're like, daddy, we never see you anymore. I'm like, here it comes. Are you even our father? I'm like, oh my God. Because we don't even recognize you. I'm like, what? Okay. Like, you think we can hang out tomorrow in Toys R Us? I'm like, sure. Where else would we want to hang out and spend quality time together? So I'm like, guys, I'm not buying it. They're like, all right. They go, they skipper back into their rooms. And I can't sleep that night. I'm like, I'm not a good father. I'm not home enough. The kids don't recognize me. My wife's like, can you please just get a grip? I'm like, I woke up in the morning and go, that's it. I'm going to be the best dad in the world. I said, kids, today is not Sunday. Today is Sunday fun day. They're like, yeah. Wake up. That says, what do you eat for breakfast on Sunday fun day? Pancakes. Right? You ever wonder how pancakes even started? I always thought about this. You ever wonder, if your kids ask you, can I have cake for breakfast? You're like, no, but I'll fry the cake and pour sugar water on it. That sounds like a good, healthy way to start your day. I can only imagine the first kid to get pancakes. He's like, Ma, for real? She's like, yeah, have a good morning. He's like, you're the best mom ever. I love it. You can't have a cake, but you can turn it into a muffin. It's okay, take off the frosting and you're fine. My kids come down, I got sugar everywhere, pancakes, fried oil, sugar, it's perfect for them. They're so excited. We have to go out to the backyard, they're on the swing sets and they're playing, and then that's not big enough. So we take them to park one, and that's not big enough, we take them to park two, and then it gets to be lunchtime. What do you do for lunchtime? You gotta go to pizza. That's what, you know, what else would you eat on fun day? So we go for pizza, and then they eat pizza, now it's time for dessert. What do you do for dessert on Sunday fun day? Ice cream. It was hot out, so we take him to the ice cream store. And I take him to the ice cream store. I know my kids, at that point, my four big ones, my fifth was too little. I come in, chocolate, vanilla, vanilla. And my kids look at me, one of my kids looked at me and goes, Daddy, there's no sprinkles. I said, it's okay, they're out of sprinkles. You know the little kids, they're like, what? This is an ice cream store. This is where they create sprinkles. I'm like, no, it actually probably comes from China, gets liver distributed. So you ever get the feeling where like your whole world is thrown? You ever get the feeling like when you see your teacher married for the first time? Remember that? When you're like in third grade and you're like, who's that man? And she's like, that's my husband. You're like, what? You're my teacher. Don't you live under the desk? You ever had that? Don't you live in the closet? Like you have a life outside our classroom? My kid's like, what? This is where sprinkles are created with ice cream, with the ice cream man behind. I'm like, well, it's complicated. No sprinkles. He goes, no sprinkles? I said, there's no sprinkles. He's like, but I can't eat ice cream without sprinkles. I said, I'm sorry. He goes, oh, no sprinkles. This is the worst day ever. And I remember going home, restraining myself at levels that I never thought possible. And then understanding for the first time a piece of Chazal. Chazal says something amazing. I learned this as a kid, and I've never really paid attention until this moment. Pirkei Avos, it says, Eizeh hu Ashir. Who is wealthy? Like, what's wealth? Wealth is with accumulation of money. Just anyone who's got bank account. You don't even have money. All you have is numbers next to your name. What, that doesn't do anything for you. It's only valuable because you get to purchase things to make you happy. So who is wealthy? So the Chumash is something so brilliant. It's so simple. Hasameach b'chelko. And I always thought that was like rabbis being rabbis. What are they going to say? Who's wealthy? You invest in Google early? Like, what else are they going to say? They're like Jewish mothers. You came in first place. There were eight other kids before you, but you're in first place too. You know what I'm talking about? Like, what else is the Jewish mom supposed to say? You're terrible? No. What are the rabbis going to tell you? Who is wealthy? Just be happy with what you got. You're happy. And then I fully understood it that night, talking to my son. Wealth means nothing if you don't have a vessel to hold it in. If all we have in life is a funnel. It feels good, it feels good, it feels good. I need something new. It feels good, it feels good, not something new. If every second of our life is only hoping that the next second is happy, because everything I had previously is gone, I don't have a vessel. I got no ability. I have no skills and happiness. So all the money in the world won't make me happy. Go to some places in this country and you see people with levels of wealth and you're like, why are you guys all on drugs? Because it's not about how much money, it's about whether or not you can create the vessel. At that moment, I got it. How many days of my life did I turn up to God and go, really? And God goes, what? What's the matter, Charlie? You're living in a country of freedom. Thank God you have your health. And what? You didn't get sprinkles today? How many days do we go home and go, well, how was your day? Terrible. What happened? I got a grade I didn't want. Or my coworker looked at me the wrong way. Or do you believe what your mother said? Or I can't believe she said this. And the sprinkles of our lives. I can only picture the Kodesh Baruch going, really? This is Sunday fun day. You're living at the end of time. You've never in the history of the Jewish people did you have so much. Your great-grandparents were lucky to walk down the block. I have given you everything. There's more food than you. I mean, you remember my grandparents tell me stories of where, like, when my grandfather used to go to different place, parts of, like, Mooncotch, he would have to, like, carry water and bread. Today, if I get on the Jersey Turnpike, if I pull over to stop and there's a package and there's no OU label, I'm like mad at the OU. You ever had that feeling? You're like, it's in a package and it's not kosher. What does the OU do all day? My wife's like, Charlie, it says pork chops on top of it. I'm like, well, they should figure that out by now. I assume everything in a package is kosher. And my kids walk into supermarkets. They're like, just take off. When I was growing up as a kid, I said, Mom, is this kosher? My kids won't even ask that. They're like, well, if it's food and it's in a package, it must be kosher. My grandmother told me stories when she used to come from Europe and she was a seamstress. And she'd show up on Friday and they'd go, if you don't come on Saturday, don't come back on Monday. My first job was Davis Polk & Wardwell. It's like this really waspy firm. I showed up day one, September 6th, my first day on the job. They're like, welcome to the firm. We pay you a lot of money. We expect you to work really hard. I'm like, that's cool. They're like, well, let's put you on your first case. I'm like, oh, yeah, about that whole working thing. yeah, it's September, so I'll be out next week for 2 days for Rosh Hashanah. They're like, oh, okay. I'm like, oh. Then I'm out for Yom Kippur. They're like, okay. I'm like, oh, then the fun just begins. yeah, I'll see you in October, full pay, please. And they're like, sure, no problem. God's like, for real? You have now, I'm not minimizing pain, and how people, we're going through pain, and there's crisis and challenges. No, I'm not saying that life is perfect. But if you take a minute and ask what we got, the question is not whether or not we're going to get the next thing to make us happy. The question is whether or not, why haven't we built the vessel already? Why isn't my vessel so tight? Why don't I walk around so happy with what I have? You know how we get happy? God pulls it from us and we go back to normal. You ever get this feeling? If God forbid anything goes wrong with our normal life, we'll just take us back to normal. When Hurricane Sandy came to my neighborhood and almost washed my whole town away, all I wanted was a little bit of light and a place to put my feet when I get out of my house. When every single weekend is snow, I'm like, listen, I just want no snow. Just, and if God forbid there's ever a health issue, God forbid, all you want is just go back to normal. No. I was upset about this, and I'm mad about this. Just make it stop. Just go back to normal. And God goes, what happens when I didn't shake the can? Oh, are you like, be happy with your eyes? You're like, no, this isn't third grade. We're sophisticated adults. We're not happy with things like eyes or ears or life. Come on. We're so important. And God, that's like my kids would be happy about the little things in life, like health, happiness. And every second of every day, God looks at us and goes, do you realize this is a mitzvah gedola? This is what Judaism is about. This is the essence of what it means to be a yid. Chaim Vital. The gifter says that one of the biggest mitzvahs is v'samachta b'chol atova shenasan l'cha Hashem l'kech l'vasecha. You have to be happy with what you got. You gotta be happy who we are. So how do we get there? So one thing to realize right away is we think the reason I'm not happy is because if I'm happy, then it's the end of the road. By the way, science shows the exact opposite. Anyone who's in the field of positive psychology, you know, study after study. I don't have time to go through the studies of what they did with kids and doctors and anyone who's gone through the study of the nuns. They did the famous longitudinal study of the nuns. Science shows the opposite. The greatest indicator of someone who wants to be successful is when happiness is the leader, not the follower. And Tyrus says the same thing, by the way. Rav Yeruchim says that if you want to be able to understand where power comes from, simcha generates power. In the Sefer Chochmas and Musar, it says, a person with enthusiasm can overcome almost anything. And Chaim Volozhiner says that a Talmud with an hour of learning with joy does so much more than multiple hours without. Happiness is that secret weapon that changes your life, that changes your marriage, changes your parenting, changes everything that we do. So the question is, how do we get it? If happiness is the ability to achieve and to appreciate pleasure in what we have and not pain what we don't, and if happiness is the greatest indicator to becoming successful, how do we become happier? And the answer is multiple ways, but tonight I want to focus on the most important. The most powerful way to live a life of true simcha. I'll tell you a story. A few years ago, I got asked to speak in a very interesting place. I got a call from an organization. We want you to come speak for a couple of days. I said, sure. I said, where is it? They said, Minsk. I'm like, Minsk, Bahamas? They're like, no, Minsk, Belarus. I'm like, no. And then they did the thing that they shouldn't have done, or they should have done if they wanted to get me. They sent me a movie entitled Rocky IV. Has anyone seen Rocky IV? Rocky IV, for those who haven't seen it, is a movie about the American Rocky fighting a Russian. Okay, so I saw the movie. I'm like, I'm from, like, I am going to Russia. They're like, please don't embarrass us. I'm like, it's going to be too late for that. I get up and I land in Russia. I turn around as I land. They give me my. They don't speak any English. I don't speak any Russian. They give me my translator. He looks at me and goes, "Hi, my name is Vladimir." I said, "Vladimir, why don't I call you by your Russian name?" He says, "What's that? By your Jewish name?" He goes, "What's that?" I'm like, "Drago." Have you seen the movie? Drago's the bad guy. He goes, "Drago? I be Drago. What's your name?" I said, "Well, want to call me by my Jewish name? My name is Rocky." He goes, "Oh, you be Rocky? I be Drago." I said, "I be in heaven for a week." So it was an amazing week. Dancing, singing. I've never in my life experienced a week like that. My whole life. Now, Russia's got very few things going for it, as far as I can see. It has two things that I can count going for it. One is snow. A lot of snow. Two is vodka. And you need that much vodka because of that much snow. So it's the end of the week, and we're having like the goodbye party. And it's me and Drago for the last time. And he's drinking way too much vodka. And so am I. And I turned to him and I said, "Drago." He says, "Yes, Rocky." I said, "Drago, can I ask you a question?" He says, "Sure, anything." I said, "Do you ever think about being Jewish?" He goes, "What?" This is like the KGB moment. This is it. Like, I thought I'm like dead after this. He says, I'm like, "Look at us. I mean, a bunch of guys come in from America, dancing and singing. It's, you ever think, like, what a people?" So he looks at me and goes, "I thought about it a lot." I'm like, "Really? I'm about to convert Drago to Judaism?" So I says, "But I can't do it." I said, "Why?" He goes, "Because you people do something, I don't know how you do it." I'm like, "What?" He goes, I'm telling you, I look at you people, and I don't know how. How do you live the way you do these things?" I said, "What are we talking about right now?" He goes, "I look you two all day, and I don't know how you do what you do." I'm like, "Oh, you want to share with me what you're telling me?" He goes, "You people never stop doing this. I'm telling you." I'm like, "What don't we ever stop doing?" He goes, "You people never stop praying." He goes, "I promise, I wake you up in the morning, I see you. You know what you do when you get up? You pray. Then you go to the bathroom. Then you pray. You think you're done? You're not done, because you go to the synagogue, and then you pray. Finally, you're finished. Piece of bread, not for you. You pray. And then, you pray. Afternoon, pray. Nighttime come. You think you're finished? You're not finished. Pray. Finally, you go to bed? Not you people. Pray again. All you do is pray. You ever wonder that? That's all we do. I mean, if you look at what we do all day, God's somewhat of a confident in, I mean, I would think that he's like, "Guys, I get it. I created the place. I'm okay. I get it. Like, I know what I'm doing. I appreciate what you're saying, but, like, I don't need this. Like, I got it. Like, I know. I built the place. I'm pretty good." And all we do all day is pray. Why? So there's multiple reasons. But there's one in particular. When I ask my son to say thank you when I give him something, I don't ask my son to say thank you for him, for me. I ask my son to say thank you for him. Because when you say thank you for something, you know what happens? You express that what I have is something that I am getting. It's a gift. And I need to appreciate it a drop more. Wake up in the morning. You know, every time we wake up in the morning, the first thing God asks us to do, it's amazing. If you just take Birchas HaShachar, it's astounding. Wake up every morning and God goes, "Before you get out of bed, I need you to do something for me. I need you to say thank you that you're alive." Why? Because there are millions of people right now that would give anything in the world to see their loved one for one more minute. We're sandwiched between Yom HaShoah and Yom HaZikaron next week. There are thousands of people that would give all their stuff, all their stuff, all the sprinkles and the ice cream, just for a minute to see the kid who died in the war last year for one more moment. And every morning we wake up and God goes, "Whoa, whoa, 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 I know you're important. I know you're important. Take a deep breath. You know what that is? Life. Take a little pleasure in that your eyes opened this morning. Before you even stand up, you call your mom, and your mom could smile because her son is still alive. You see your children. Forget you did anything. Forget the A's and the B's and how much money. Forget all that stuff. If you're paying attention, God says, you wake up in the morning and you just give me a thank you. And if you would give me a thank you right, you would go, oh, pleasure. I get more pleasure out of life than everything I'm going to accomplish that day. Because if they pull that for me, whatever goes next doesn't matter. Then you go to the bathroom in the morning. You know what happens then? I spent the summer in a place called Camp Hask. It's my good friend Surly's in the room. We were co-counselors together. I came in, I was a brash young kid. And they put me next to a guy with kids who couldn't even go to the bathroom themselves. Let me tell you what it's like to spend a life where you can't control that function. You can be sure that summer when I came home, for 1 minute I came out and said, you know what? I got to tell you something. Thank you. That's not a given. My whole system of my body isn't a given. I don't own that. My day didn't even start yet. And God goes, not for me. I got it. I know how I built you. I'm good. For you. You want to be happy? You want to take pleasure? Say thank you. And my day didn't even start yet. I was one time flying home from Florida to New York. I'll never forget this. I flew Delta. They stopped me up in the hub. The hub of Delta is Atlanta. It was Sunday afternoon. There were a million flights in one terminal. I'll never forget this my whole life. In the corner of my eye was a blind man trying to find his gate. In my life, I will never forget this. And everyone's got their luggage out because why would you want to wait for your zone to be called? You want to get whatever left and not pay for the checked bags. So everyone's waiting there for their zones and he can't even walk through the halls. And everyone's making an announcement at the same time. He can't even hear anything. And he's trying so hard. And I jumped up and I ran to him. I said, sir, can I please help you to your gate? And he was embarrassed by me even asking him. He said, son, I can take care of myself. And I said, I'm sorry, sir. And I sat back on that chair. And for 30 minutes, through my whole time of waiting, all I did for 30 minutes was watch one man without his sight try to go for 15 feet to find his gate. Eyesight? Come on. Us? Eyesight? Who wakes up in the morning and has the ability to go, oh my gosh. And you get hit in the eye with a basketball and you can't see, that's when you appreciate your eyesight. But every morning, stop it. Like I said, my home, 2 years ago when a lady named Sandy showed up for a visit and knocked on our door, in the middle of the night, I took my family, the water was rushing through my front door so quickly that my children and I went out the back door and ran to a house for life. I'm out of a movie. My wife couldn't get over the fence. She said, don't leave me. As the water was rushing, it was unbelievable. You can be sure that for the 2 days after Sandy, I said, Rokara, it's all mine with Kavan. And God goes, here's the deal. Trust me. I created the place. I'm your dad. Trust me. I don't want to schlep you to shul to bore you. I'm your dad. I got you. The system is set up. I'm giving you everything. And I need you to enjoy it. Because if you don't enjoy what I give you, it's even worse. Here's how. Say thank you. Hakar Satov reminds us that this is a gift. And the object that I have, if it's a gift, it better be appreciated. If I don't enjoy my gifts, why do I demand them for the next day? If I can't turn to God and go, God, I got to tell you something. I'm not saying I got a perfect life, but whatever you gave me, I enjoy. Where do we get the gall to turn to God and go, oh, by the way, can you give me some more? Hello? What's with the... Can you make it rain more? Because I don't really enjoy what I got. But maybe if you give me more, I'll finally be happy by the next outcome. And every morning God goes, listen, just say thank you. Just be thankful. Be thankful to your mom and dad for how they raised you. Be thankful to your kids. Just be thankful. Because every moment you say thank you know who wins? We do. But it goes one more step, and this I'll end. When you say thank you, Hakar Satov, gratitude doesn't just take us towards happiness by appreciating the object. It goes one step further and it's a little more complicated, a little more deeper, and this is where I want to end. You know, there's a great story about the man who got into a fight with his wife. The man goes to the rabbi and goes, "Rabbi, my wife is, she's upset with me." He goes, "What happened?" She goes, "I don't know. We had some anniversary, our wedding anniversary, and I just forgot. I can't keep dates well." And the rabbi goes, "Listen, you know, women, they care about these things. They're, you know, they care about the relationship. Her anniversary, you guys got married on a certain day, that's important to your wife." He goes, "What should I do, rabbi? She's mad at me." She goes, "Listen, before you come home, stop by the flower shop, get her a bouquet of flowers, come home and say happy anniversary." He goes, "Rabbi, you're a genius." He walks into the house, he knocks on the door, she opens the door, and here she sees her husband with a bouquet of flowers. She goes, "Oh!" And he goes, "Here, the rabbi told me to buy these for you." Now some of you are thinking, I said that to my wife, by the way. No, I didn't. Because sometimes in life, when you have an object, you appreciate the object itself, but you don't realize that the object is really just a way for the person giving you the object to say that I love you. We're in a very unique period of time right now. And it's a period of time that we don't fully appreciate, because it's in a way overwhelmed with the tragedy of this period of time. But if you look back to the first ever Omer, if you look back to the first ever moment where the Jewish people as a people celebrated the period of time when they got out of Egypt until they walked to get the Torah, and you ask yourself, what did the Jews do that first time together? It's amazing. God had the Jews do one thing consistently from when they left that sea. Well, actually, it's today. Today, the first day of Iyar, was the beginning of this one exercise. That was the only consistent exercise that God used to train the Jews, to get them to a level, to get the Torah. What was it? So if you notice something amazing, something very practical. On the first day of Iyar, according to some opinions, the matzah ran out. They took enough matzah for a few weeks and it ran out. So what happened? They had no food. So Moshe said, Kodesh Baruch Hu to Moshe, "Here's what we're going to do. Every family gets an omer of food. They get a portion of food called the man." And we sort of go through this so quickly, but think about it for a second. Picture as if you were there. And it's today. This happened. And you go to your cupboard. And you go to your fridge. And there's no food. And the kids are like, "Mommy, I'm hungry." And you turn to your husband and you go, "We have no food. And we're in a desert. We're going to die." And your husband says, No, it's cool. It's cool. Moshe said that tomorrow morning, God's going to leave us a portion of heavenly food for our family." And you go, "What? Does God know I got six kids? What is he, like Babies R Us now? He has a registry? I didn't pay my membership dues. He has a list from the shul, from the Shalach Matis campaign. How in the world does God know how many kids I have? I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. We're not even in Shevet Yehuda. We're like a no-name family in Shevet Dan. How does God know that I got six kids?" And the husband turns and goes, I don't know. You can imagine, every parent in the room, you know what I'm talking about. You can imagine going to bed that night with trepidation. You wake up in the morning and that husband leaves his house and his hands are shaking as he walks to his deadly location and he goes, there's no way. And he looks down and he sees 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And he comes home, puts it on the table, and his wife goes, "How did God know?" And the next day, the only rule really with Omer is you can't keep it on purpose. And God goes, "Eat." The next morning, he goes out with trepidation. Okay, God got it right the first time. You think he knows? And then the next day, and then she goes, "You know, your mother's coming for Shabbos. Does he know that she, and your mother likes to eat? Does she know that you have to get extra for your mom?" And he goes, "I don't know. Now God knows whether your mother's coming. Was he on Facebook now? He knows what your mother's doing the weekend?" And he goes, "I don't know." And he goes out on Friday afternoon and he goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The Jews did one thing during this period of time. One thing and one thing only. The exercise that God had them go through was, "God knows my name. God knows my name." To, "God knows my name." Every morning God says to you, "I know your name. You don't believe me? Walk to get your money. You don't believe me? I know you had a baby. You don't believe me? Walk to get your money." The only thing we did for Sfiras HaOmer, the only thing that we did this entire period of time, was every morning wake up and remind ourselves that in some crazy way, that I can't possibly understand how, the Creator of the universe. I don't know how this is possible. If there's one thing in my life that I grapple with most, it's this. How is it possible that the creator of humanity knows my name? How? I am so insignificant. Why would God even care about me? That drives me crazy. And the only thing the Jews did this period of time was that one thing. That object isn't just to mean to appreciate the object. It's to appreciate that behind the object is a giver of that object is trying to say, these are your flowers. I love you. You are my people. The whole world is for you. And the role, the goal of the Omer is to go, I don't know if I get it. Day 1. I don't know if I get it. Day 12. I think I'm starting to get it. Day 25. Maybe I get it. Day 36. And the hope and the prayers is that when you get up to 50 on Shavuos, you turn to God, look Him in the eye and go, I get it. You know my name. And He goes, you got it? Now here's the instructions to change the world. Hakaras HaTov is not just to appreciate the object. Hakaras HaTov is to appreciate the giver as well. Maybe, just maybe, that's why Rabbi Nachman says, if you're not happy, you are totally missing it. You can check every Jewish box in the world. You can be like the best Jew ever and check the whole thing. And if you walk around glum, you're totally missing it. This is it. Tamid. Always. And we walk around with a drop of gratitude. We take the stuff that we have, and we all want more, and God should give us more. Why not? Why should there be any Jew in the, or any human in the world that has physical needs? The world has so much to offer. But the essence of what it means to be a Jew is to recognize and appreciate that every second of my life I am grateful. So I got to enjoy what I got. And I got to enjoy it and enjoy it and enjoy it and enjoy it and enjoy it. And every second that I'm enjoying it, I got to realize that not only do I got it, I got the giver as well. That is unbelievable. That for some reason, I don't know why, He picked me to be His daughter. He picked me to be His son. And He's taking care of me, and I don't know why I deserve it. But if a Jew walked around that every single day, then whether it's Adar or it's Tisha B'Av, because some days are Adar and some days are Tisha B'Av, we are B'Simcha Tamid. And my bracha to all of us, you know, the Baal Shem Tov says that when you see a Jew who's unhappy, it shows that he is not happy with his mission in life. He stands against God. But when you see a Jew, even with tzaras, that's happy, he shows the Kodesh Baruch Hu, whatever you give me, I trust you. Whatever you send me, I'm there. My bracha to us is that while we live in one of the greatest societies of all time, we should not allow it to shape how we feel. We should not allow ourselves to wait for any objective, any object, any outcome to be the moment where I start to live happily. We live happily when we choose to. And every second that we realize that this isn't coming to me, and I say thank you, every moment of Hakaras HaTov, and every moment where we live Kedesiris HaOmer, we get stronger and stronger and stronger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And all the water in the world that's available for us fills and fills and fills. And the people around us, they'll think we're crazy first because we're supposed to be upset. That's how it's supposed to be. And they'll go, what are you so happy for? And it'll just change our families. It'll change our kids. It'll change our communities. And I hope and pray we should be Zocha. This is, why not here? You guys are from New Jersey. Just tell me. I'm in Long Island. You pick me up. I'll meet you guys in Newark. It'll be fine. We should be Zocha. This community is the community that finally looks up and goes, you know what? I'm not waiting for another outcome. We're happy now. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu looks down and goes, finally, a bunch of my kids at Besimcha Tamid, let me show you how I can make you happy, God should say. And we should be Zocha to be happy like this. And then He should do His part and bring us to Mashiach Tzidkenu. May it come soon in our days. Meher v'yameinu. Amen.